Jane. So I have a special episode for you today, but before we get started, I just wanted to prep you. We're going to talk a lot about Medicare, ins and outs of Medicare, and I have some suggestions, some of my personal thoughts about it, but I do want to emphasize before you get this information that if you have questions or concerns for your unique situation, please do reach out to somebody. Please make those decisions on your own. Nothing expressed here is an endorsement of any particular product or approach, but please, please, please take the information from here. Take those next steps if you need to and make the best decision you can for your particular situation. Okay. All right. Now let's get started. Welcome to another episode of Real Conversations About Aging Parents. I am here today with another expert, Nikki Ferret. Hi, Nikki. How are you?
I'm doing well, Rebecca. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad we got in contact because I've had some listeners request some more information about Medicare specifically. And I know for a lot of my family members and even my patients, their eyes kind of glaze over when you mention Medicare. It can be a very intimidating topic. And so I'm glad that we're in connection here and we can talk more about it. So before we get started, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself, like where you're from, what you like to do? How did you even get into talking or thinking about Medicare products?
Yeah, no, I am based in Illinois in the Chicago area. My insurance agency is Chicagoland Medicare, but I'm actually licensed in 39 states, so I can help folks all across the country. I've been doing this for over 8 years, and my business really, myself and my agents, we really focus on educating and informing Medicare eligibles, and then help placing them in the products that are the best fit for them. So that's kind of what we do at Chicagoland Medicare.
What do you like most about your job?
I really actually like the education part the best. I mean, we start off when people come to us, myself or one of my agents, we have a Medicare kind of 101 that we take them through, because until you understand what original Medicare is, you really don't understand what products you might be a good fit for you, you know, above and beyond that. So we really take them through the whole education process, explain what original Medicare is. Sometimes we're talking to people when they're still working and they have an employer plan and they're not quite ready to retire. So we can kind of guide them on, okay, when would be the right time to retire for you? How much would it cost if you did go to Medicare? So they can do a little price comparison there. And then we explain the different products that are available to them, the types of products, and kind of take them through all the pros and cons of each one. And usually by the time we get someone through that presentation, by the time I'm done talking, the presentations take 45 minutes to an hour, depending upon how long or how many questions someone has. Some people come to you and they've already done a lot of research and a lot of homework, and some people are in the very beginning stages. But typically it's about 45 minutes to an hour for that first consultation. And then by the end of it, people typically have a pretty good idea of what kind of product they might be interested in. And then we start narrowing it down from there. And based upon doctors, medications, even like the person's lifestyle, their budget, kind of can help guide them and figure out like what's the best fit and what's going to work best for their lifestyle and their needs.
I'm gonna take a step back even from that, just how you even got interested in Medicare. Did you have an experience with that? Did you just sit down one day and think that Medicare was like super interesting? Or how did you even get interested in that kind of work?
Yeah, well, actually, I have a family member, my husband, actually, who's always been in insurance and in the Medicare side of things. So I was just hearing about it over the years a lot. And I actually started doing this when I had all three of my kids at home, and I kind of wanted something to build into as they got older and needed me less. So this was a really great way to kind of get started on a career again after taking years off to stay at home and just kind of grow into it. And then a couple years ago, I decided to start my agency and branch out and expand state-wise, expand product-wise and carrier-wise. So that's how I got interested in it, and it just kind of being around someone who worked in that realm. And then once I started doing it, like I said, I enjoy the education aspect. So it was really kind of enjoyable to work with people who would come kind of confused and just sort of overwhelmed and be able to break it down for them, explain it to them. And people are always so appreciative because it is very confusing and no one wants to think about insurance. No one wants to think about Medicare. It's not fun. It's not exciting. So you kind of just want someone to explain it to you and then help you. And my thing is always thinking like, I just want someone after all is said and done, January or whatever, the first day of the month, their new plan, Medicare plan starts. I want them to be able to lay their head down at night and they're protected. And that's kind of how I like to run my agency and how I like to help my clients.
Sure. Well, thank you for being part of this conversation. We're going to go in a couple different directions. I'm going to take 10 steps back from that because I always like to start with the 30,000 foot view. And correct me if I'm wrong on your understanding of how these things came about. But the way that Medicare is not that old. I think we talk about it as if it's existed for 100 years, but it's really, I would say in terms of products from the government, fairly recent. This was in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And how this came about was back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, health insurance wasn't really a thing. So you went and saw the doctor and you paid them money or mm-hmm. cows or something. And there was kind of this trade. Medical care in general was sort of a trade and had prices, and then that there wasn't a third party payer involved until really about after World War II, when people came back to the United States from the war and started working, and these were in more long-term jobs, like unionized jobs, then it was those groups of these larger employers that started offering subsidized health insurance to people as part of their employment package. And even today in the United States, that really is still the driving force for people in their working years to obtain health insurance is through their employer. So either you're employed and you get the health insurance that way, or if you're have below certain poverty levels, you might get it through Medicaid. And then, of course, as we're all very well aware of, there's a gap of people that either can't get or self-employed or they're unemployed, doesn't offer health insurance and they have to go get it on their own. This is where the Obamacare ideas came in to try to cover people in that group as well. So it's still not a perfect system, still largely employer driven, which is difficult when people aren't staying in their jobs as long. So they're switching jobs fairly frequently, therefore switching health insurers. And what the conundrum that it proposed, so we built our United States healthcare system on employer-based coverage, is people eventually stop working. And so they picked an age of 65 as the approximate age of people stop working. And so if you've lost your health insurance or your employer, we can't have a whole bunch of 65 and up people in this country where all of the health issues start to crop up around that age and then worsen mm-hmm. and not have any coverage. And so the solution many, many decades ago was to basically do a payroll-based system where you paid a certain amount of taxes through your payroll and paid into a Medicare system that you could then for pull benefits when you met the age of 65. Now, it's even been expanded since then. There are people under the age of 65 with specific disabilities or other issues like dialysis dependent, things like that, where they could get Medicare at younger ages. But the large part of Medicare has been basically payroll, bankrolled through the payroll system. So if you go back to any W-2 check, you're going to see a deduction for Medicare. And then that system goes through this big government agency, Medicare, and they're the ones that are administering the largest healthcare plan for a large portion of people. So that's how we're even talking about Medicare, like as an entity. Do you have any other perspectives on that?
No, that was wonderful. That was a great, history lesson on how Medicare came to be and how it helps people. Yeah, it needs to be there because once you retire, you're on your own if you don't have Medicare. So,
right. And in other countries where there's a socialized healthcare system, mm-hmm. that's usually birth to death. And so they don't kind of have this segregated thing where at a certain age you go into a government health system. That's really unique to the United States. And as a program, it's a fairly popular program. I mean, and the government does a lot of things that are inefficient and difficult. And Medicare has not been perceived, at least, I mean, not that it doesn't have some issues. And right now we're having terrible issues because of there was the hacking incident with one of the payer portals. But anyway, in general, I mean, Medicare is well liked by the people that enjoy Medicare services, and it's there for them when they need it. But what we're going to talk about today is sort of the way that it's grown, and then the advent of managed Medicare plans, which is in the whole scope of things fairly recent. But let's just start with Medicare A. So what do you tell people about Medicare A specifically?
Well, Medicare A helps cover the cost of your inpatient care. So if you have to go in a hospital, you're admitted to a hospital, that's what you're going to be utilizing is your Medicare Part A benefits. Also, it covers skilled nursing, it covers hospice, so it does do some other things. But the primary thing that most people utilize it for most frequently would be those inpatient hospital visits. So if you are admitted to the hospital, let's back up. So the cost of Part A premium-wise for most people is $0. So most people, once they go on Part A, will not have a premium. So that's why oftentimes people, if they're working, they hit the age of 65. Now, there are some specifics with this that you need to be aware of, but most people are able to go ahead and take Part A and not have to pay any more premium and use it as a secondary insurance to their primary employer plan. Now, there are some rules that go along with that. So I would always suggest talking to someone like myself, an agent, just to make sure you're doing the right thing. But most likely you can go ahead and pick up Part A and still continue to work. Because as we know, a lot of people work past the age of 65 nowadays.
Right, right.
So you can keep that employer group plan, go ahead and get premium free Part A. And then what Part A does for you, now this would be if you did not have an employer plan, this would be if you're just on Part A, if you would have an inpatient hospital visit, you would have a hospital deductible that you would pay for whatever hospital benefit period you're utilizing. What this means is you're admitted to the hospital. This year, it's $1,632. You would have to pay that deductible, and it would cover your inpatient hospital visit up to 60 days. So it starts when you're admitted to the hospital, and then it ends when you have not been receiving inpatient care for 60 days. But that $1,632 deductible will cover you for 60 days of care inpatient. So that's kind of what Part A takes care of.
Yeah, and Part A does extend into the home through home health services. That's the only non-inpatient
right
side of Part A.
Yes.
Like, nobody's going to come out of this podcast saying you should do X, Y, Z.
Right.
This is a very custom decision. My goal here is just to paint the picture for you, whether it's yourself or somebody that you're taking care of or helping, that you have some more language around it and you have some more ideas of what that is. And so Medicare A, yeah. So basically inpatient, with the little exceptions of hospice and home health care, also lumped into Medicare Part A. Okay, so let's talk about Medicare Part B now.
Yeah, Medicare Part B is outpatient care. So it's going to cover things like your primary office visits, your specialist visits, you got to go get an MRI, durable medical equipment, Part B medications, which are medications that you could not administer yourself. You don't go pick them up at the pharmacy. You have to get them done at a facility or a physician has to administer to them. So Part B covers a lot of things. It's your outpatient care. Most people are going to pay a premium for Part B. Now, it's determined on your income level. The majority of people out there, the typical Part B premium is $174.70 a month, but it can be higher or lower based on your income. And Part B is something that you probably do want to hold off on if you're going to have credible employer coverage, because otherwise you might be paying two premiums. You might be paying the cost of your employer plan and your Part B premium. So you might want to hold off on that until you retire. And you do have a special election period that you can utilize to pick up Part B once you do retire, but it's going to cover the outpatient. There's also a deductible with Part B as well. This year, that deductible is $240. The deductible and the premium change yearly. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services put those numbers out in the fall, usually around October sometime, we get those numbers. So they do change nearly, go up sometimes go down a little bit, but typically they're going to go up, they're going to increase in cost. But that's basically your Part B. That's what your Part B does for you mostly, the cost and the coverage that it allows.
So there's something as far as very specially carved out here, which is the physician services. even in an inpatient setting, so whether a hospital or skilled nursing mm-hmm. facility or rehab facility, mm-hmm. fall under Part B. So this creates mm-hmm. some issues because people think, well, I'm in the hospital or I'm in a rehab facility, I'm here under Part A, mm-hmm. but they don't have Part B coverage, right? And so there's kind of a gap that's there. So these patients, Medicare A only patients, might be liable or have difficulty with getting the physician services in some of those settings, only because that's a different layer that is not included in Part A.
True. I mean, if someone doesn't have employer coverage, I would not recommend they only get the Part A.
Right.
If you're retiring and you're losing your employer coverage, then you're probably going to want to, I mean, I can't really envision a situation in which you wouldn't want to get Part A and Part B. The only time you'd want to just pick up the Part A is if you do have that credible coverage. Then right. you can kind of keep going with that. Use your Medicare Part A as secondary insurance. And that's going back to what I was saying at the beginning. It is tricky, and you referenced that as well, because there are a bunch of different rules with that too. If you work for someone who has under 20 employees, then your insurance is not credible, and Medicare is going to pay first. And then your employer plan is going to be secondary. So there are a lot of little things to know. If you're contributing to an HSA plan, you can't contribute to an HSA plan and get any part of Medicare, including the premium free Part A Medicare. Once you get that, you have to stop contributing to your Part A. So there are some tricky things in there, and that's why you said make sure that it's very individualized, and each person's situation is very important to know all the details. Right. I think I failed to mention too with Part B, there's the deductible, there's premium with Part B, there's a deductible with Part B, and then there's coinsurance with Part B. Yeah. So even once you fulfill that deductible, it's not like going to see your primary or your specialist is going to be at no cost to you. Now you're going to be paying 20% and Medicare right. will pay the other 80%. So yeah, I would always recommend, if you have any questions, to talk to someone. If you're helping out a parent or a loved one and there are any questions about when they should pick up any of these parts of Medicare, it's always good to talk to someone and make sure that you're doing the right thing. Because some of these things you can't go back on. If you're getting premium free Part A and you enroll in it, you cannot unenroll. You cannot disenroll. You can't get out of it. You're stuck in it. So some things you can change and go back and make a different decision. And some things you're kind of stuck in. So it's just important to make sure that you're making the right choice for you at the right time.
And it will always end up being a layering effect, right? Because there, as far as like if you have Medicare Part A and you layer Part B on top of that, and then you layer a secondary insurance on top of that, that's the most common scenario. That's actually what my grandmother has. She has a Medicare Part A, Part B, and then Banker's Life, I think, is the secondary. And so it's kind of confusing. So anybody goes into a hospital setting, there's actually three different payers happening at the same time. There's somebody covering the hospital stay itself, somebody covering the physician services, DME or durable medical equipment. And then somebody, if you have a secondary, covering the co-pays. I mean, it is kind of this interesting, I call it almost like a layering or stacking of different products on top of each other. So we talked about Medicare A and then Medicare Part B. I'm going to skip C for now and go to Part D. So that's the one that came about in the early 2000s that covered drugs. And so the big political issues back before Part D came about was that Medicare wasn't easy or wasn't covering a lot of prescription medications. And back in the day when prescriptions were a couple of bucks each and we didn't have all these extremely expensive oncology drugs and all sorts of different, anyway, the high dollar drugs that you can see any number of commercials for right now wasn't a big deal. But when drugs started costing $1,500, $2,000 a month, when the arthritis drugs came out for like rheumatoid arthritis, like Humira. And so a lot of these drugs have been considered the best in their class to date. Some of them even curative for some of these conditions like hepatitis C, but the costs were not anywhere attainable for any normal person in our population. And so anyway, so the political pressure mounted, and it was 2003 when Medicare Part D premiered, and that was really the prescription drug coverage. So you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So drug plan, I would always recommend someone gets a drug plan once you no longer have credible drug coverage. I keep using that word credible coverage because it's very important. And that's something that people should talk to their HR department before they retire, just to make sure whatever whatever coverage they have is credible. Part D in particular, you can incur a late enrollment penalty that'll follow you for life if you go 63 days without credible drug coverage. So once you're on original Medicare and you no longer have your employer plan, if you go more than 63 days without coverage, that's when you're going to start incurring that late enrollment penalty. So I always recommend, even if you're not on medications, because I've talked to people like that before, and they're like, well, I didn't think I needed a drug plan because I didn't have any medications. The reality is that most of us at some point will need that coverage, and we're probably going to need some kind of medication, even if it's just a maintenance medication. Some of these, like you mentioned, they can be inexpensive because they're generic. And then some of them can be even more expensive. There are medications that can cost $10,000 a month. I mean, it's to have that coverage is important. So I always recommend someone get on there. There are lower cost plans on there. If you're not on any kind of medication, get on the lower premium plan that you can find in your area. Then at least you have it if you need it, because you don't want to start getting that late enrollment penalty. It can grow the longer that you don't have the coverage. And if you miss an enrollment period, you might have to wait a while before you have another enrollment period where you can take that up. But aside from that, prescription drug plans, once again, it's very specific to each individual's needs. So when I work with a client, or if you're doing this on your own, if you're going to DIY it, go to someplace like Medicare.gov and make sure you put in all your medications and put in the pharmacy that you use, because these plans can be a huge difference. Like, I talk to people all the time and I'm working with them and I'm looking up a plan for them. They're like, oh, my meds are really inexpensive. They only cost me a couple bucks a month. It's like, well, they only cost you a couple bucks a month on the plan that you're currently on. If we just willy-nilly enroll you in something just because we're like, oh, they're cheap medications, they don't cost that much, it just depends. I mean, I've looked at plans and the plans are all built the same, but they all have different formularies, which is the drug list that's covered by the plan. Then they break that formulary drug list into tiers. Plans can put different medications on different tiers. So just because your medication's a tier one, which is the least expensive tier on one plan, it might be a tier three on another plan.
Right.
Each plan has a different copay or coinsurance amount for the medication. I mean, you just really need to pay attention. So you need to find out, okay, the medications you're taking, the pharmacy that you're going to, is it in network? Maybe you don't want to switch pharmacies for whatever reason, or maybe you live in a rural area and you don't have pharmacies that are just right around the corner like they are where I live, where it doesn't matter if you go to Walgreens or CVS or Costco, right? You know what I mean? It could matter to you. Maybe you don't want to drive 20 minutes to get to a pharmacy. So we got to put all that information in and then find out which plan is the least expensive to you. And you can get a standalone drug plan, or you can get a drug plan that's built into a Medicare Advantage plan. So there are two ways to get it. Either way is fine as far as not putting you on that late enrollment penalty, but it's just making sure that you have the coverage you need for your needs. And I always tell people, just because your brother or your sister or your spouse or your neighbor is on a particular plan, and this goes for any of the plans, it doesn't necessarily mean, it might be a great fit for them, but we got to make sure it's a great fit for you. Because
so does,
you know,
Part D, outside of the Advantage plans, does Part D have multiple formularies as well that you choose from? Or is it just, I thought it was just one, like, this is Part D, this is what we cover. Does it segment even within Part D? So you could Part D, the blue plan, the red plan, the green plan, or can you help me understand that?
Yeah. So the standalone, so just talking about standalone drug plans, each carrier is going to have a number of them. So, and I'll throw out some carrier names. I don't lean towards anyone. I'm just going to throw out some ones everyone knows, right? So say it's like a United Healthcare PDP. Well, they might have four. United Healthcare might have four prescription drug plans in your area.
Or Medicare Part D, standalone.
Yes. Prescription drug plan, Medicare Part D. Maybe United Healthcare or Humana or Aetna, whoever, they might have four Part D plans in your area. Even though it's the same carrier, the same insurance carrier, each of those plans could have a formulary with a different drug list. So you got to be really careful, even switching within the same carrier. You can't go, well, plan A at Humana is the same as Plan B at Humana for Part D, because they could have different formularies, they could have different tiers for that medication. So like I mentioned, Medicare.gov, I use my own tool for this where I compare the plans that I offer, but you got to put all those medications, and it comes down not just to even the medication, it comes down to the dosage of the medication, how many pills you need or tablets, capsules, tablets, pills. They can, even if it's a particular pill that's sold as a capsule or a tablet, it can make a difference on the cost. So if you're not very careful when you input all of these details, you could be very surprised the first time you go to the pharmacy after getting on a new plan. So there are details that you have to pay attention to that people tend to kind of look at it more casually, which makes sense. You wouldn't think it'd make that big of a difference. You know what I mean? But it can make a difference on the cost. So
Medicare doesn't have its own Medicare administrated drug plan. You go into a portal and then you have to pick one of the available kind of approved plans in your areas. And then those are going to have different coverages and different premiums, I assume, even within that.
Yes. So the government, CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, they oversee all the prescription drug plans. So they determine whether a prescription drug plan is allowed to be on the market. And these plans are even rated. They come with star ratings. So Medicare will put out star ratings for these plans. You can also kind of look at that to know whether it's got a good quote unquote grade. But carriers and private insurance companies are the ones that offer these plans. So you got to get it through a private insurance company, but it is Medicare products are very, they're CMS dictates, you know, what needs to be in a plan, and they have a lot of oversight. That's the word I was looking for. They have a lot of oversight. So these plans aren't allowed to stay out if they're failing people, but there can be plans that for whatever reason are rated higher than another. But it really, yes, pay attention to things like the star ratings. But the most important thing is to pay attention to your particular, in this case, with Part D plans, your particular medications and where you want to go get those medications from, because that's going to be the determining factor for your cost.
And what's the price range that you see on these plans per month?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it can go, there's one carrier that has a $0 PDP, prescription drug plan. Part D plan. They can go up to $100. It just depends. And see, that's the thing too. Like, don't just looking at just premium is a mistake, because you want to look at the total cost. So maybe because of the medications you're on, a $75 premium plan would actually cost you less money over the course of the year than a $30 premium plan. You can get hung up on those numbers and then end up paying more in the long run, because sometimes those more expensive plans can actually be better for different medications. So that's why it's really important to use a tool. Like I said, work with an agent or go to Medicare.gov and make sure you put all of those different parts in for your plan and kind of compare which ones are out there.
Got it. And this can be, so say you're put on a new medication in July and it's not really well covered. How often are people going in and switching these plans?
So you have your opportunity to enroll in a new plan when you're eligible for Medicare. So that can be when you turn 65 or when you retire. You'll have a special election period if you wait to pick up one till after the age of 65 and after you retire and leave your group plan. After that, there aren't that many opportunities to change. So there are special election periods out there for certain life events, such as a move. If you move out of the state or out of your plan service area, you're going to get a special election period to get onto a new plan. But if you don't have something like that happening, the annual election period, which runs October 15th through December 7th every year, is when most people have the opportunity to change their plan yearly for prescription drug plans, for Part D plans. So that's the time that you want to look. So in September, if you're already on Medicare, in September, you're going to get what is called your annual notice of change booklet. Do not just think this is enough. And people are getting inundated with insurance carriers and stuff around this time of year. So it's unfortunate, because I talk to people all the time. And they're like, I didn't get my annual notice of change booklet. And I'm like, I'm really sure that you did, but I totally understand right. how it just can get like lost in the shuffle. But when that annual notice of change booklet comes in, or if you're savvy and you just want to hop on the website of your particular carrier, you can go access it there. It's going to come out. They must send them out or have them available come September. Look at your plan. First, check and see what's changing. Is my premium changing? Is my deductible changing? Are the copays for my tiers changing? Then make sure you actually plug in your medications and make sure nothing changed in the formulary that's now going to cost you more, because that can happen just because right. this year you were only paying $20 copay for a certain medication. It could change tiers on the formulary or be dropped from the formulary, and next year you could pay a different amount. So you want to check that as well. If you like the plan you're in still, you don't have to do anything. But if not, between October 15th and December 7th, you need to enroll in a new plan, and then it will start January 1 of the following year. Outside of that, in a like a life event, like a move, you're not going to have very many chances to change your drug plan. So you do want to make sure every fall you go through that little housekeeping process and make sure that you're going to be in a good plan for next year.
And I would take it a step further and just see if you can plan a visit with your primary care physician in maybe September or October, because the last thing you want is to go visit them in mid-December and they're like, oh, here's this amazing new medication for your very rare illness and it costs $2,000 a month and you're out of that period. So if you're an optimizer and you're always trying to like find the best time to do things, and I'll go back to you mentioning the deductible at the beginning of the year. So again, kind of thinking of this in a cycle, and trying to close out your medical interventions before that deductible resets January 1st. And so it can be like a madhouse for some of these procedures in the last quarter of the year, because people are trying to get the procedures completed before the deductible starts back over. So anyway, so if I'm taking care of somebody, I'm thinking to myself, a prime time to go visit with a specialist or a primary care doctor is really going to be in the early fall. That way you're aware of, you have some time to plan for a change in the Part D if needed. Okay. Very good.
Yeah, that's great advice. Really good advice. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. Okay. So now we'll get to the Part C. And I said this out of order only because Part C is kind of the one that can pull these together. So Part C came from, I don't know if anybody was politically active in the 90s, but there was a big push in the 1990s to get to a balanced budget. This is a big political thing. It's sort of been a political thing since then as well. And Medicare is always in a big topic in election cycles like we're in right now. But back in the 1990s, the obsession was to get budget neutral. And so there was a Balanced Budget Act in the end of the 1990s. And part of this was the creation of Medicare Part C. So it was meant as a cost-saving measure. I think also acknowledging the demographic shift, that they knew that there was a baby boomer population was going to be aging into Medicare, which they're already well into it now. But back in the 90s, there was this idea that there was a lot of people that were going to be utilizing Medicare services. And what were we going to do to help control some of those costs? And that's also the 90s where we experimented with things like HMOs, other, you know, even the employers were going to managed plans or capitated plans, where there was a lot more, I guess the word manage always makes me think, a lot more attention to trying to control costs and to bundle things or to make things more efficient or easier. Now, the HMOs didn't stick around as much. I think HMOs were supposed to be the future of healthcare. And then for a lot of different reasons that didn't come to pass. But now we have this hybrid system where you have HMOs and PPOs, which basically means sort of a more managed approach or a fee-for-service approach, which is the PPO systems tend to be kind of split that way. But ever since Medicare Advantage plans came about in the late 1990s, there's been just a gradual adoption of them over time. Currently, it's around, I think, 40% of Medicare recipients use an Advantage plans. That was projected to keep going up over time until fairly recently. And we talked about this before we started recording, Medicare and some of the beneficiaries noticing some drawbacks to those plans and some questioning as to what's the future and how many is Medicare going to let roll over into a managed plan. And so, and I hate to even say this because I know you're the expert on this, but just the way I think about it, so it's in my brain, what these plans tend to do is Medicare is offloading the administration of the plan to a third party. So the Aetna, United, Humana, somebody like that. And they're saying, repackage all these things we just talked about, Medicare A, B, and D, I want you to repackage them, you know, call it something and sell it separately. And then we pay you on the back end a certain amount of money. And so then so now you have this third party, right? Like a United or Aetna. And their goal is to take the money they get from Medicare, provide services, and then create a margin. And so somewhere in that margin, they wouldn't be doing this without some margin in there so that they can keep themselves profitable or afloat in some way. And so that's what this is really aimed at doing, is deconstructing all the things we just talked about, making it one thing that you buy, and then it's all together. You're not enrolling in separate plans and so forth. But anyway, so that's the way I think about Medicare Advantage plans, and I'd like to hear your perspective on them.
Yeah, no, that was a really good description. They're bundled approach plans. So what happens if you are on Original Medicare and you decide to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan? What that means is you will no longer actively be using your Original Medicare Part A and Part B. It's still working in the background. You still have all the same rights and protections it provides. But now what you're doing is you are actively using your Medicare Advantage plan, which is provided by a private insurance carrier. So the government pays the private insurance carrier to take over your health care. And then these bundled plans have your Part A, your inpatient, your Part B, outpatient, and typically your Part D, drug coverage, built into this one plan. So now when you're going to the hospital, the doctor's office, or the pharmacy, you're showing this one card that contains all those benefits. So that's basically how those work in a very small nutshell. There's a lot more to it, but that's kind of how it works. And then with these plans, you have a maximum out of pocket associated with every plan. There's a premium. There are some premium free plans out there. They're $0 premium plans that people can enroll in. But these plans are also pay as you go. So as opposed to Medicare Supplement, which we haven't really talked about yet, but with Medicare Supplement plans, you are still actively using Original Medicare and then your supplement. You kind of described this in the situation you were talking about. So if someone goes to the hospital, they would show their Original Medicare card and it would be billed through Original Medicare. And then whatever was not covered by Original Medicare, their supplement would then be billed for. With Medicare Advantage plans, you have a pay-as-you-go system as opposed to supplements, which take care. I mean, there are different supplements out there, but typically with supplements, you're going to pay more in premium and then less on the back end, less when you receive services. Medicare Advantage plans, you're going to pay less on the front end, less in premium, but now every time you receive a service, you're going to pay a copay for that service. So you go to the doctor's office, there's a copay. You go to the hospital, there's a copay. So that's kind of how those plans work. When I'm trying to compare them to the supplement, just because it's important to know how each of those plans work, to kind of know what you might like, what you as an individual might be more drawn to.
Right. And I can imagine that now you're getting into a marketplace with almost unlimited choices of, you could have this different option here, and then you have this premium. And so you definitely get into a different world. Medicare is pretty boring in that way. Like, it's Part A, B, and we talked about D having a little bit of flexibility with the plans in your area, but it's very straight, like a vanilla, I guess you'd say. Like, this is what it covers or what it doesn't cover. When you get into the Advantage plans, it's a more of a mosaic. And so you're looking at, and they can cover things that normally traditional Medicare won't cover. And so that could be things like hearing aids or dental. And I say this, and I'll be very transparent. I disclosed it to you before. I have a negative impression of these plans, and we'll talk about that. But one of the things I would caution people is when you watch the ads that are run about these plans, they're always pushing something Medicare doesn't cover, almost always something like hearing aids or like something that's like very tangible, like, well, Medicare doesn't cover hearing aids and we do. And you're interested in this plan because you need hearing aids. Mm-hmm. But what happens is the details that cannot break down after that, because it can be very difficult, especially if you're talking about somebody in their at this age group. Maybe they have some cognitive issues, or maybe they are not as tech savvy and they're not going in and like triple researching all these things. Mm-hmm. Everything is all in the details, right? Which is, what is your specific medical situation and how are you going to be supported or covered? And just like you said, if the trade-off there is that you're on the hook for
a lot of these expenses later on, and you're kind of hoping that you don't have these expenses. And if you're on a fixed income, it's a lottery then, right? It's or like a gamble in that I could pay a little bit more upfront and not owe as much, or pay less upfront and then maybe be on the hook for more. My experience with them, I have met people that seem to have done well on them, but they typically are very fairly healthy 60-something year olds, right? As they get sicker, they have a catastrophic event such as a stroke, then things start to break down. And where I end up seeing the problems, and I'm speaking just specifically from my clinical experience in a rehab setting, is that managed patients are a different, they come in under a different setting. And everybody in the healthcare system knows they're not going to get the same services as a Medicare patient, meaning they're going to come into a rehab setting and they're going to give us 7 days to take care of them. And if we haven't proven within 7 days that this person is getting ready to go home and getting better, then they're going to cut it off. Or if I prove that, hey, they came in pretty weak, they haven't moved a lot, we're still trying to get their nausea under control, they'll cut it off. And so it's a 7-day approval period, which puts the family into a tailspin of administrative appeals, because it's the patient that has to appeal, not the facility. So then it's like, think of it like, okay, you've had a stroke, and now you're doing all these appeals every 7 days, hoping that you're going to be able to stay in the rehab, get the rehab that you need. But then the next patient over is a Medicare patient, and that's 30 days off the bat immediately. And so the approach is much different. And I know I'm biased because this is my part of the worldview, but it's such an important thing. And even on my notes, when I write out my patients every day, I asterisk all the managed patients, because I know that those are going to have a lot more difficulty getting services. And people have told me over and over again, I had no idea this was going to be an issue when I signed up for this Advantage plan. Like, nobody told me in this process that I was going to have to fight every 7 days to get the care that I thought I was due or that I had already paid for. And they end up having much shorter lengths of stay, higher complication rates, higher return to hospital rates. Because again, I mean, the facility is under the gun because they're not going to get paid that much. Not paid for that many days at a time. And so to me, I just have this grossly, just to be honestly, negative impression. And I have talked to so many patients who cannot wait for the enrollment period with this new health condition that they have, and they're going to go back to traditional Medicare. And I thought it was really just me noticing that, but then I saw the news articles in the last couple of months coming out and saying, wait a minute, for some of these plans, this is not quite what we thought it was, or the disclosure period on the front, the disclosure on the front end may not be thorough enough that they understand the trade-offs. Because if it's just like, oh, it's basically just Medicare, but you'll get some hearing aid, that's what they think is happening. What's really happening is the only way that this works from a business model standpoint is for somebody like United to squeeze benefits somewhere, right? You got to create a margin somewhere, and they're going to squeeze. And the thing is, I'm not sure that the 65-year-old on the other end knows where that plan is squeezed. And that's where the problems come in. So they could live in these managed plans for a long time and have no problems because they haven't hit that point where that's squeezed, right? But they know that they got something on the front end, which again goes back to the marketing piece of it. But that's what I see. That's my experience as a clinician. Those patients, everybody in the facility knows who they are on the front page because it's such a big deal. And I don't think people understand that when they come in. And I'm not saying they get different level of medical care. We worry about them because they have been sent home early and not ready and then have complications. So anyway, thank you for letting me vent about that. But that's my perception of Medicare Part C managed plans, and I'd love to hear a different perspective.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to say I haven't heard. I've read the news articles too. I personally haven't had experiences like that with the people that I work with, but I would agree with you. First of all, do not get distracted by bells and whistles. Make sure the plan and the plan's primary benefits are what you need to look at when you make these decisions. I mean, dental is wonderful, and I think dental is an important part of our overall health, and you don't get dental with original Medicare, but I would never suggest someone go for a particular Medicare Advantage plan based just on the dental benefits. It has to be like an extra. That's what they are. They're extra benefits, right? So I would say that, A, and then also, yes, make sure you really understand the plan. And if you're doing that on your own, that means you got to look at the summary of benefits. You got to look through the evidence of coverage. These booklets can, the evidence of coverage can seem pretty daunting, but it's, you really want to read through them and make sure that you do understand how the plan works. And that's something like when I'm working with someone, after we do that initial consultation and they decide the type of the plan they want to go into, and then we narrow it down even further. Once they decide the plan they want to go into, we look at all those things and we make sure, okay, understand that this is going to be your cost associated with it. I would agree with you as well. If you are someone who has a lot of health conditions, I mean, none of us can predict the future. None of us what we're going to have coming up. But if you are going to have, if you know right now that you have some health conditions and you are using your benefits quite frequently, then something like a Medicare supplement might be the easier route for you. Now, it's going to be more expensive. And for some people, that's just not the financially, it's not feasible to them. So it just depends on each person's situation. Something else too, because you kind of mentioned people can't wait to, if they're on a Medicare Advantage plan and then they aren't satisfied with, for whatever reason, getting onto a Medicare Advantage plan is easier than getting onto a supplement after you've been on Medicare for a while. So what happens once you are 65 and you have enrolled in Part A and Part B of Original Medicare? Once you have those Part B benefits, you enter what is called your personal Medicare supplement open enrollment period, and it lasts for a 6-month window. During that period of time, you cannot be turned down by an insurance company, and you are not asked health questions, and you can't, any pre-existing conditions you have must be covered by your Medicare supplement. That is the best time. If you know you want a supplement, that's the best time to go ahead and apply for one. Because say you've been on a Medicare Advantage plan for 5 or 6 years, for whatever reason, you're dissatisfied. Now you're calling up your agent, you're saying, look, I liked the Medicare Advantage plan for a few years. Now it's not working for me the same way. I want a supplement. If someone called me with that, I would say, I am more than happy to apply, help you apply for a supplement. But you are not automatically accepted. So your current health status could determine whether or not you are accepted, or you could pay a higher premium. Maybe they'll accept you, but they'll say that you have to pay more because of your condition. So it's much easier to go from, as long as you have a valid enrollment period, it's much easier to go from Medicare supplement to Medicare Advantage plan. But it's a little bit more complicated to go from Medicare Advantage plan to Medicare supplement. So if you're hearing these two different plans and you're thinking, you know what, I'm pretty good shape now, I'm going to just go ahead and enroll in one of these $0 premium Medicare Advantage plans. But down the road, when I'm 73, 74, I think I'll make that switch. Just be sure. Now, all states have different rules, but a lot of the states, you most likely are going to have to answer health underwriting questions, and you could be denied. So don't just think I'll postpone it and I'll get one of those supplements later. So, I mean, aside from that, plans, yes, when you're talking about a PPO or an HMO, it is managed healthcare. So there are rules that you have that you'll follow, and there are rules that the insurance company puts out. I do feel like if people are aware of as much as they possibly can be aware of, that they can be okay on those plans and satisfied with those plans, but you don't want any surprises with your healthcare. That's the thing.
And, like, and no, thank you so much for thank you for sharing the time frames. I think that's always helpful to keep in mind as well. And especially again, if that's a busy time of life and you're trying to get your retirement or you're moving, and I could see 6 months goes away. It goes really quickly. And yeah. And you're not aware of it. So one of the things that came to my mind is, and I don't know if there's a calculator out there that does this, but if I was helping somebody choose a Medicare plan, is I would find a way to cost out common conditions. Mm-hmm. So a fall with a hip fracture, a stroke, maybe pneumonia. So if I have COPD, then I'm going to cost out a really bad episode of pneumonia, maybe some ventilator support, long-term rehab for a while, and go through and say, and mock it up and say, under these different scenarios, I think the cost differences could be astronomical. And again, going back into the specifics, you might not be able to predict what you have, but common things are common. And again, going back to just the fall with the hip fracture or a stroke, those being some of the most common things that happen in that age group, and really challenging the systems to tell you the true cost of each of those. Are you aware of any calculators that'll do it by condition?
I have not seen that. Maybe there's some out there, but you know, it can be as simple as taking a piece of paper, drawing a line down the center, and then putting some of these things in. Say you're looking at a particular Medicare Advantage plan, but you're also like, oh, I'm kind of interested in Medicare Supplement Plan G. Okay, we'll come up with a scenario, like you said, and say, okay, say something happens and I have a hospital visit, what will it cost me on my Medicare Supplement Plan G versus what will it cost me on this Medicare Advantage plan I'm looking at? If you know you have to go see your specialist, like you have to go see a cardiologist and you have to get these follow-ups once every 3 months, well, what's your copay going to be on the Medicare Advantage plan you're interested in versus what is your copay on the Medicare supplement? One thing that I feel like kind of is sort of sneaky that a lot of people don't know about, I mentioned it earlier, the Part B as in boy medications. So these are medications you can't get at the pharmacy. They're still medications, but they have to be administered at a facility like chemotherapy. Some people have to get a shot in their knee once every 6 months, a cortisone shot or something like that, or people that have macular degeneration might get a shot every 6 weeks. Those are all Part B as in boy medications. And those typically on a Medicare Advantage plan will cost you 20% of the cost of that medication. On a Medicare supplement, like I said, there are different Medicare supplements out there, but Plan G is one of the more popular Medicare supplements. On a Plan G, once you've fulfilled your Part B deductible, then that shot would be at no cost to you because it's covered by your supplement. So yeah, it's really important. And I've talked to people and we're like looking at these two options. And then all of a sudden they forgot to mention and they just kind of casually mentioned, oh, well, I have to go get this shot at my doctor's office once every 6 weeks. And I'm like, okay, that now we're looking at something different, right?
Yeah.
Now your cost, the cost of that, even just the cost of that shot, depending on what kind of shot it is and how much it costs, might warrant the higher premium for a supplement because you're not paying that coinsurance, that 20% coinsurance, where your Medicare Advantage plan, which was costing you less in premium, now it's costing more because you're paying the higher coinsurance. So just one little thing like that can make a difference. But to your point, it definitely, if you have some kind of condition and you know what that care is on a regular basis, just add it up, get that sheet of paper, draw a line down the middle, compare two plans and see. Because yeah, maybe the higher premium plan makes more sense for you because there's lower cost if you're getting that continual care.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but back in the enrollment period you mentioned, which is mid-October to early December, you can fluidly switch back between traditional Medicare and Part C. If you like, you have a new medical condition, you're like, oh, managed is better for this, and I'm going to go this way. Oh, then I have this other medical condition, now I'm going to go back. I mean, how open is the open enrollment?
So the annual election period, October 15th through December 7th, that is the time when anyone who is on a standalone drug plan or on a Medicare Advantage plan should look at those plans, look at their annual notice of change, because that's the time when you can change either of those plans, enroll in a new one, and it can start on January 1. Now, if you are on a supplement and you want to make the switch from supplement to Medicare Advantage, that's your time to do it because you can enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan October 15th through December 7th. That Medicare Advantage plan will start January 1. It will knock you out automatically of your standalone drug plan, and then you'll have to call and cancel your Medicare supplement. And then you'll be the next year, the following year, you will be on your Medicare Advantage plan only. Now, doing the reverse. So you're on a Advantage plan and you want to go back to original Medicare. The time period to do that is actually happening right now. It runs January 1 to March 31st, and it's called the general enrollment period. And during that time, you can leave a Medicare Advantage plan, pick up a standalone drug plan, and apply for a Medicare supplement. But like I said, just be careful if you don't have what is called guaranteed issue for your Medicare supplement. You will have to answer health underwriting. You will have to answer health questions and go through medical underwriting. So you could get denied coverage. So you just got to kind of make sure these things all work out the way they're supposed to, so you don't end up back on just a right tip, just original Medicare, unless that's what you want. But otherwise, if you say you drop your Medicare Advantage plan, you pick up a standalone drug plan, you apply for that supplement and are denied for whatever reason, now you're on original Medicare with a Part D prescription drug plan, which you can do. But all those gaps that we talked about of original Medicare, like the hospital benefit period deductible, right, and hospital copays after you've gone through the 60-day hospital benefit period, and your Part B deductible and your Part B coinsurance, those are all going to be your responsibility now because you're not going to have anything to help. That would be the time you could do it, but you just got to make sure you can get that supplement. And there are some states that, like I said, states are each a little bit different, or maybe you have a state, and the state of Illinois, for example, we do have one carrier that has a guaranteed issue plan, so anyone can get on it. As you can imagine, that premium for that plan is higher because now you got people that can't get on any other plan because of medical conditions that's their only option. So you might have to pay more, which for some people's worth it. They'll pay that extra premium. And Medicare supplements do increase over the years as well. So even if you've just been on a Medicare supplement, your premium will increase as time goes on. Every year, you're probably going to receive a notification from your carrier that says the premium has increased to this amount or that amount.
Well, let me ask you about that. So if you go into a supplement plan during that 6-month, like basically no questions asked period, and you end up rolling over to another supplement plan, does that sort of guaranteed issue, no questions asked, roll over each time you change your supplement plans?
No, I mean, supplement plans typically end up being more like set it and forget it type plans. Because Now there are rules, like I said, state to state, there are different rules. And now a lot of states have like the birthday rule that means around your birthday or the anniversary date of your plan, depending on what state you're in, you can have a time period where you can change. Sometimes that's a more liberal change, like you can go to any carrier and switch over. Sometimes it's not. It's pretty narrow, the change that you can make. Like you can just stay with the same insurance carrier and only get a plan that actually is less coverage, but not go up and get more coverage without answering medical underwriting. So, I mean, most what you typically see with most people, once they go on a Medicare supplement, if that's what they've decided to do, many people don't change that supplement. They just stay with the supplement they're on, unless it gets too expensive. And I would always say shop around if you want. Just know that, you know, there are going to be health underwriting questions that you'll have to answer. And if you've had a medical condition or if you've been in the hospital the last 6 months or last year, you might be denied, or maybe they'll accept you, but they'll say, well, we're not going to cover you for this condition for the next year or whatever. So you just want to make sure that you know exactly what you're getting into before you make the jump.
Absolutely. So I think this has been fascinating. I wanted us to take some minutes to go back over and just kind of reset everything, because I know we've talked about a lot of different areas and we could kind of do this together. So let me just talk from almost an options level. So for people that are in extreme poverty that have, say, no income whatsoever, usually those patients are on Medicaid. And I was going to mention this. You mentioned the states a few times. One of the reasons that this is complicated is because insurance, including auto insurance and health insurance, is largely under a state umbrella. So what you're looking at is an interface between a federal program, which is Medicare, and a state-administered area, which is insurance. And so that's why it does matter where you live. And knowing somebody that, if you're going to do anything like this, understands the ins and outs of that state. So if you have somebody, you have an aging parent, and they live out of state, and they're going to come to live with you in Texas or California, it may not be the exact same thing. They may have to start all over and make sure that they're having something in place that works for them. Whatever worked for them in a certain state, maybe they have to stay in that state if that's the absolute best thing that they can afford. So anyway, so the state issue, that's where that comes in. But if we go to my patients that have the least number of resources, typically if they qualify for Medicaid and have gone through that process, they'll have a Medicaid and Medicare Part A. There's no cost associated with that. That's for people that are basically very poverty stricken. They don't have a regular retirement income or anything coming like that. And so they're going to live in that area. They don't tend to carry Part B. Medicaid picks up as much as they can from the copays and other hospital stays. So Medicaid just sort of fills in the rest. Not very well. Medicaid pays very low reimbursement rates for pretty much all the services. That's going to be the very lowest you're going to see as a Medicaid reimbursement. So it can be hard to find doctors or other vendors that are going to accept that combination. Anyway, so that's Medicare A plus Medicaid. The next up from that would be that you have the Medicare A and a Medicare B plan, and then you're going to be paying copays. And that's where that supplemental insurance comes in to kind of layer on top of that to help ease the copays from those areas. And then the next one would be Medicare A plus B plus D. And that's going to layer in together. And then you're going to have a supplementary on top of that if you want to protect against the copays. And then again, in no specific order, the other option would be to go with a Medicare C plan, which is the Advantage plans, that basically takes all of those benefits, regroups them, sells them through a carrier. And then in which case, you just need to do your homework and make sure that whatever they're selling to you, despite, again, I go back to the commercials are nonstop in that time of year, but despite whatever is there, that you get really into the details and the weeds about whether or not that's going to work for you. And again, knowing what you might be at risk for, what conditions you have, and being mindful about that, especially if you're helping somebody else. So does that sound about right? Like just sort of the different approaches to getting coverage in that age group? Is that complicated enough?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes, I think like once you, I mean, the Medicaid situation kind of setting to the side, because that can be different. There are also dual eligibles that have Part A and Part B and Medicaid, and that can get tricky. And that's, like you said, let's definitely state to state, like some states have dual plans for like Medicare Advantage plans. Some don't. Some you can only have original Medicare and add on your prescription drug plan, and the Medicaid helps you. So kind of setting that to the side, not to, just because I think like a person like that needs to probably make sure they're making the best decision for themselves. Talk to resource. There's places like each state has like their SHIP, or talk to Medicare.gov. Just make sure you're in the right plan for you. But if you go to the typical choices for someone aging into Medicare, it's that original Medicare, add a standalone drug plan, original Medicare, add a Medicare supplement in a standalone drug plan, or switch over from original Medicare to Medicare Advantage plan. So just to say it, you said it right, just to kind of say it a little bit differently. If you are a person who is not getting extra help, not getting extra assistance, your main decision is, do I just want original Medicare and add that drug plan so I don't get the late enrollment penalty? Do I want to keep my original Medicare and add on a supplement along with my drug plan? Or do I want to switch over to a Medicare Advantage plan? And just knowing all the ins and outs of each individual plan and keeping in mind, like we've already discussed, that getting in and out of these plans sometimes can be a little tricky. So there are options for change, but in some cases, you have less options for change, or it's a little harder. So I think just really keeping in mind of all of your needs, and I always say like your financial situation, your health situation, and your lifestyle. If you like to travel a lot within the country, or you're a snowbird and you spend 6 months in Arizona and then you spend 6 months in Chicago, a supplement might, not saying a Medicare Advantage plan couldn't work for you, but supplement might be easier. So if you're moving, your Medicare supplement plans will move with you. If it's a situation where you're needing to move and you're on a Medicare Advantage plan, then you're going to need to change plans, because Medicare Advantage plans have their own particular service area. If you move outside that service area, you're going to get a special election period where you can look at the plans in your new area and enroll in one at that time. So it's just important to know, you know, how these plans work. And that's why if you do sit down with someone who can explain it to you, it can be kind of helpful, or just do the research on your own. You can get all this information out there. It's just sometimes people, even after they read and read and read about it.
Nikki, there was a period that ended, you said January 1st and March 31st, where you could change some things. Could you just give us a little bit more detail about what that period means now that we're in middle of March?
Yeah. So the general enrollment period is when you can leave a Medicare Advantage plan and go back to original Medicare and pick up a standalone prescription drug plan and apply for a supplement if you want. But it runs the same time frame, runs also what is called the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period. That also runs from January 1 to March 31st. So they run at the same time. The Medicare Advantage open enrollment period is limited, but you can do certain things. The main thing that you can do is if you were in a Medicare Advantage plan and that Medicare Advantage plan was effective as of January 1, you can make a one-time switch from Medicare Advantage plan to Medicare Advantage plan. So if you missed the annual election period in the fall, or if you enrolled in a new plan and mid-February, you're like, I'm not feeling it for whatever reason, this plan isn't a good fit for me, you can on your own or call your agent and go from that Medicare Advantage plan to another Medicare Advantage plan. But you can only do that once. Whatever you end up with on March 31st, you are in, after March 31st, April 1, you're in that plan for the rest of the calendar year, unless you have some kind of special situation arise. But so there are a few things you could do Jan 1 to March 31st.
So the October 15th to December 7th is like your first pass. And they're like, okay, enroll in whatever you're going to enroll in. And then there's a blackout, I guess, from, what would this be, December 8th until mm-hmm. December 31st. You can't change mm-hmm. anything. Mm-mm. And then January 1st is like a second look. Mm-hmm. Like, are you sure you didn't want to change anything? Because by March 31st, the doors are closed.
Yep.
And you're quote unquote stuck with that, like you said, whatever situation you're in for the rest of the calendar year. Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you for explaining that.
It can still be confusing and overwhelming.
Well, I think this has been excellent information, and I'm so thankful that you patiently explained all these things. And I think in a way that will make it lay out the decision easier for people as far as where to even start. And to that point, if they did want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to be in contact with you or your team?
Yeah, visiting our website, chicagolandmedicare.com, is one of the best ways. And actually, our website has a really good, like, frequently asked questions page as well. So it can be a great resource for that. We do, like I said, I'm in 39 states. Obviously, I'm not flying state to state. So we do a lot of our work by phone or Zoom appointments. And it's a really easy, great way to communicate with people and show them plan information, especially if you're doing it via Zoom. So they can visit that website and easily schedule a consultation through that website, and they'll get reminders or an enrollment appointment through the website as well. So we have a really easy scheduling tool on there, or they can call 844-844-6565 and schedule an appointment that way as well. So whatever method is your preferred.
Excellent. Well, Nikki, thank you so much for being with us over an hour now. Lots of great information. I know this is a need for my listeners to really sit down and break this down, and you've been the perfect person for that. So thank you so much for sharing with us today. I appreciate it.
No, thank you, Rebecca. I had a good time.
All right. Well, so yeah, please do reach out to Nikki Ferret if you have any questions. And of course, if you have any other topics that you want covered in the podcast, please send me an email. So thank you, everyone. I will talk to you next week. Hey everyone, it's Rebecca. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'd like to take just a moment to review the disclaimer. This podcast is for informational and occasional entertainment purposes only. Nothing discussed here is formal medical, legal, or financial advice. By listening to the podcast, we are not creating a patient-doctor relationship between you and myself or any of the guests. Really, it's just me and a possible guest or two, sometimes three, sitting around talking about difficult topics related to aging parents. If you have or suspect that you might have a medical problem or condition, you should seek advice from a licensed medical professional. If you have any questions or concerns, please read the full disclaimer in the show notes or contact me directly. Thank you again for joining us today. I can't wait to see you next week. Have a good day.